intimidated by this little machine. Feel comfortable to speak up, all right?
It's not a stun gun, is it?
No. Okay, we're doing Mitzvah Shin Chaf Hei, Mitzvah Yeshiva Sukkah. So we're just getting a little background practice. We're learning the Sefer Chinuch Minchas Chinuch. Sefer Chinuch was one of the Rishonim.
What does that mean, Sefer Chinuch?
It's like training. And really, he wrote the Sefer for his children, for his son. He writes in his introduction, he doesn't want his son to hang out at the street corner. It's been an old problem, hanging out at street corners, especially for youngsters, to hang out at street corners. And he wrote that he wants him and his friends to spend some time, and therefore he wrote this Sefer, you know, really, you know, something called user-friendly. You know, today we're very much into user-friendly. For the Sefer in a style which would be very user-friendly for his son, where he identified the mitzvah. In a different than the Rambam, he went according to the parasha of the Torah. Welcome back, Mr. Lewis. He went according to the parasha of the Torah. From Bereishis to Vezos Abraha, identifying how many parashios are in that parasha. How many mitzvot are in that particular parasha. And then he went through each one. He identified the mitzvah. He gave the source. Where in the Torah is that mitzvah found? We were in 8th grade in MTJ, Rabbi Bluth. We learned Sefer HaChinuch, and our job was to identify the mitzvah, the source of the mitzvah. Where is this? There's a mitzvah to put on tefillin. Identify the pasuk in the Torah. So, you know, you go through Sefer HaChinuch, he'll point out the pasuk, and also he'll give a reason, a possible reason for the mitzvah. There could be a million and one reasons why. If the Torah doesn't say a reason, so even when the Torah says a reason, there could be much more than that, a particular reason the Torah openly states. But most mitzvahs the Torah does not give reasons for. We find interesting that there were a couple of mitzvahs that the Torah gave reasons for, and then sometimes people said, you know what? You know, the Torah says, let's say, it says by a king, you can't have too many wives, right? Because maybe they'll turn your heart. So Shlomo HaMelech, Solomon said, you know what? Thank God I'm a wise person, Solomon. Shlomo says, I'll have a lot of wives and they won't turn my heart. They won't. It was a problem. It was, whatever it means, at his level, he was effective. So sometimes by giving a reason, sometimes people think, you know, that reason doesn't apply to me. I will be able to be above that. So therefore, not everything the reason is given, but...
They think they can disprove the reason.
Never to disprove the reason. Because obviously, if God gave that reason, that means it's appropriate. But some people say to me, that might reason not apply. Torah says, don't have many words, it's going to turn your heart. My heart, they're not going to turn. I'm the wisest of all men. It's not going to turn my heart. Right? So therefore, the Torah generally does not give reasons. But of course, there are many reasons why the Torah, every mitzvah the Torah gives a mitzvah, there's a reason for it. God did not just God didn't say to jump up and down 10 times every, you know, maybe it's a good exercise. But there wasn't a mitzvah that Hashem gave. There's reasons for everything, and therefore the Sefer HaChinuch suggests different reasons for the mitzvot of the Torah. And then he tells you, when does it apply? Does it apply today? Or did it only apply at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when he had the Holy Temple? You know, he'll tell you some halachos. So he gives you a little bit of taste, a little bit of everything, so to speak. A reason, application, when does it apply, source. So it's a very user-friendly type of Sefer, and obviously he felt that that's something that children, youngsters, would appreciate. We learn that many times the Chinuch is quoted in Halacha, because we see some of the Halachas that he says. You'll see the Chafetz Chaim Mishabura quotes the Chinuch many times for the reasons of the mitzvahs. Then there's a Sefer called the Minchas Chinuch. Minchas Chinuch was, let's say, about 150 years ago, I would say. Let's say 500 years after the Sefer HaChinuch, where he goes into detail about the mitzvah. But like we said, the Sefer HaChinuch did not write the Sefer to be in-depth, to go all the way in-depth, because he wrote it for his son, who was young. So therefore, the Minchas HaChinuch goes into the depths of the mitzvah. And that's what the Minchas HaChinuch is all about. So tonight, now, that's a good question. And if you look at volume number one of this three-volume set, which is a very beautiful set of Minchas HaChinuch, they have it here, and they did a tremendous job on the Minchas HaChinuch. because he used to abbreviate in places where people before him never abbreviated and will never abbreviate after him. Because he...
You are not having an interruption.
Right, that's everything. Who wrote it? It's one of the Rishonim, one of the early commentators. He lived after the Rambam. And
one of the in which year? So you
read, I would say 700-800 years ago, I would speculate.
700-800.
Right. I would say in the 1200s or so. Correct. But we know he was
authentic. Like
maybe in Spain or something. I would think from the Sephardic rabbis. So he followed the Rambam.
And the Rambam was a Sephardi?
Sephardi, yes. And he was an authentic rabbi. There's no question about his authenticity. The only question is, who is he? But there's no question that he wasn't the, you know, like, you know, the author.
And the Memphis Cleanup was written 500 years after that?
Yes. I just want to explain to you what I mean to say. A lot of people enjoy learning the Minchas Chinuch for the challenge of figuring out his abbreviations. Because he abbreviated, he would quote Gemaras, the Minchas Chinuch, when he gained the depth, and he would abbreviate certain things that were, if you're not holding in the Gemara, you wouldn't be able to figure it out. So therefore, it was a nice challenge. Some people appreciated the challenge, and other people felt it very difficult because might not be in the Gemara, and I would like to figure it out. Also, there were printer's mistakes that fell in over the 100 years, and no one retyped and got rid of those mistakes. And also, if you notice what the old Minchas Chinuch looks like, see how this is? It looks like a run-on, right? And this one, the new one, is broken into paragraphs with titles on the side. It breaks everything down, and also has some notes on the bottom. So that's why it's the new one. I'm a very big fan of the new Minchas Chinuch.
And he removes the abbreviation in the one.
And they open up many of the abbreviations, so you don't have that challenge.
Who read the Minchas?
Yes, the Minchas Chinuch is Rabbi Babad. And you should know, it's Rabbi Ben Yosef Babad. There is someone who gives a hashtacha, a kashrus supervision, and he's from that family. He writes from the family of the Minchas Chinuch. But Rabbi Babad, and we have someone who's dealt with the kashrus issues, you know, Rabbi Babad, that's the...
Yeah, I mean,
you've seen him around.
He gives us a book.
Yeah, and that's from the family of the Minchas Chinuch.
Is this an attempt to explain some of the Sefer HaChinuch?
Yes, more to explain details of the mitzvah. And he will focus on he will make diukim. He will analyze the language of the Sefer HaChinuch. Exactly right, Daniel. He'll analyze the language to see, we could, you know, by analyzing the language in the text, you could figure out what the opinion of the Sefer HaChinuch is and see what his opinion is. Correct. He would analyze the Chinuch and then take it a step further and go deeper into the mitzvah. So, here we are, we'll start the mitzvah. I'm going to give Mr. Young Rice a copy. Here. What? Shin Chatei. Mitzvah Shin Chatei. Mitzvah Yeshiva Sukkah. Mitzvah Sukkah. Everyone have it? Half of you have it? We are commanded to dwell in a sukkah, shivas yom. For how long? 7 days. So if you're in the land of Israel, it's only 7 days. Outside of Israel, in America, the eighth day of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres. So the Gemara says you're supposed to sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, but we don't make a blessing of Leh Shiva Sukkah. But really, the holiday of Sukkah is only for 7 days. But outside the land of Israel, we have the first 2 days, like we have 2 days of Yontif. And from the beginning, we also, so even though it's a separate holiday, but the Gemara says we're still supposed to sit in the sukkah. But we know there are people who have different customs, whether or not everyone sits the whole time in the sukkah, so people have different various customs. I'm not coming to discuss that now, but now I'm discussing the mitzvah min HaTorah. We're commanded to sit in a sukkah for 7 days.
You say the bracha every day?
Every day. Every time you go into the sukkah and you eat in the sukkah, you have a meal in the sukkah, you make a blessing, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam, Asher Kedishanu Mitzvosav, Tzivonu Leishev Basukkah. Right? So let's say you'll make Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz, and then you'll make you have to say Hamotzi, you'll say Asher Kedishanu Mitzvosav, Tzivonu Leishev Basukkah. You make that bracha. except by Kiddush, we put that bracha together with Kiddush, right? We make Kiddush, now we make the Leishe Vazogamah.
Should
it
come before Kuf or after
Kuf? What'd it say?
It should come before
Kuf. Shem's after Kuf. You want me to help you?
Yeah.
Towards the end. Here, one second. Shin. Maybe it's the wrong line.
Uh-huh.
You got it. It's the wrong line. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. I'll try to find it.
Yeah. Shin Kofay is
Tov.
Okay. Yes, yes, Mr. Yonash.
So our homework, find out now which perfect in the Chumash.
Okay, so he quotes the pasuk for you. Very good. So he brings in the pasuk, right? Shenema. He brings the pasuk says, "Basukas teishu shivas yom." The Torah says you sit in a sukkah for 7 days. And what's day one? The Yom Rishon hu Yom Tesvav Tishrei. The first day is the 15th day of Tishrei. 15th day of Tishrei, which this year will be on Wednesday night, right? That'll be 2 weeks from tonight. 2 weeks from tonight will be the.
No.
I mean, I'm not 2 weeks of that. I'm talking already. Right.
Three weeks.
Or more. No. What's that? Today's. Today's will be 4 weeks. 4 weeks from tonight. 4 weeks from tonight will be. Will be young. 4 weeks from tonight. So it's appropriate, I felt, that we know that there's an idea by Pesach and Fine. It says that 30 days before the holiday, you start going into and discussing and looking at the halachas of the holiday. It's said by Pesach. The question is, does that apply to Sukkot as well? And many say yes, it applies to Sukkot as well, 30 days before the holiday. So it's already we're already within 30 days of the holiday. So it's appropriate, we can already start thinking about Sukkot. So he says like this, Mishar Sheha Mitzvah. Now, it's interesting that the pasuk says here, you should sit in the sukkah leman yedu derasecha. The generation should know ki basukos hashavti. But in sukkos, Hashem placed the Jewish people in sukkos. During the years they were in the desert, they were in sukkos. The question is, what does it mean sukkos? Does it mean it's a machlokas in the Gemara? Sukkos means that they lived actually in a hut. They lived in huts, or they're referring to the sukkos, they're referring to the special clouds of protection that protected them by day and it protected them at night. Daytime it protected them from the heat of the day, and at night it protected them from the cold. So there's two opinions. And therefore, what is it?
Come on, that's
the Anonia cover, right? One, it's the question is, the Sukkos is referring to the Anonia cover.
By definition, a Sukkot doesn't have a roof, so how can you refer to the clouds at the top end?
Sukkah is like a covering of some sort, right? Sukkah is like a schach.
So usually we don't have real covering on a
sukkah. The schach is the covering. Right, the anonia cover, the clouds are like a protection. We're like a protection. So, those are the two opinions that he brings down. What's the reason for this mitzvah? Because here the Torah itself says, I want you to remember, I want you to know that we lived in, now, either in these actual sukkos, these huts, or is it referring to the special clouds, the miracles. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a beautiful piece where he asks the following. I can understand, if you want to commemorate the miracles that God protected us in the desert from the heat of the day and the coldness of the night, so I could, you know, you're remembering the miracles, like, you know what, you remember Mitzrayim, you remember the great miracles God took us out of Egypt. So I could understand that explanation. But what's the explanation of the opinion that says, we lived in a hut, so therefore, I want you to also live in a hut. If the sukkah represents the clouds of glory, of protection, so we're remembering the miracles. But if it's remembering that we lived there, what's the idea that we should commemorate that? You know, a lot of people come down to the Tenement Museum over here on Orchard Street, right? And this is where the people live. So, okay, I mean, is it a very moving and inspiring?
No, it is just a history.
Like
it,
okay.
It is just a history that you remember where your ancestors lived.
Okay? Is that enough? I'm saying that our ancestors lived in many places. You know, they spent time...
But this is God commands, like you live in Mitzrayim. Why in Mitzrayim you didn't have an America
vote? Right, do we commemorate the living of Mitzrayim, or we commemorate the calling out of Mitzrayim, the miracles of Mitzrayim? Do we commemorate the living?
This you tell me. I don't know.
You know, Rabbi.
I don't know.
We commemorate the going out of Egypt. We don't commemorate the fact we lived here. So good, we lived in the desert. So if you commemorate
but
the miracles... Okay, so very good. See how you live. Very good. So now, let's elaborate on that.
We can't replicate the Mount Yaakovlev, but we can't replicate the hut.
But what's the significance that we lived in a hut? What is that? So Moshe Feinstein has a very interesting idea, but I want to get to. He says that a hut is a temporary dwelling. When they lived in the huts in the desert, they knew that any day the clouds would move and they would move, right? When did the Jews camp? God, when the clouds stopped, they stopped. When the clouds went, when they moved.
Did the clouds? They brought the manna.
There's also manna came down from heaven or whatever. But the point was, it was not a permanent dwelling in the desert. The desert, living in the desert, represents the most temporary dwelling there is, so to speak.
It's like
camping. You camp out, right?
What
did you say, Daniel?
Sort of like the trial phase before they went to Eretz Yisrael.
Exactly. They were on the move. They were on a road. When you're on a road, there's always a lot of stories, you know, the guy goes to the Chofetz Chaim and it says, Rabbi, what's going on? I see your house. Your chairs are broken. Your table's broken. Whatever it is. Chofetz Chaim says, when you travel, do you take your table? What kind of table you have? What kind of furniture do you go with? I'm only traveling. I don't need big furniture. Same thing is, I'm only traveling here. It's only temporary. As if I don't need such... it's only temporary. Something like that. Whatever. You understand the point. But the point is, the desert is a temporary dwelling. The point of Sukkos is a person should remember that this world is a temporary world, and the idea that was given over to the Jewish people in this desert, they lived a temporary living, to recognize that this world is not meant for permanence in itself. But if this world is meant for permanence itself, how would they live in? Why would God have them 40 years in such a temporary dwelling? But the point of this world is to recognize this is a world of action. This is a world which is temporary, and there's going to eventually, this world is 120 years, and eventually there'll be a world that will last forever. And that's symbolic of the sukkah. The sukkah represents a temporary dwelling. You know, the rain has to be able to, should be able to come into the sukkah, right? You know, try to make it a way. So that's.
Aren't you allowed to go inside if it rains?
I didn't go inside if it's raining, right? But when you're living, when you're in the sukkah, you don't make a sukkah with a strong, right? The top of the sukkah is you can't make a cement ceiling because it has to be temporary. That's what a person has to recognize. And they got that lesson in the Midbar, and we have to commemorate that, to recognize that. And you could say that 7 days of sukkahs represent each day of the week. Everyone should recognize every day of the week is a temporary. And if it's temporary, therefore, they could go ahead and take advantage. If someone knows it's temporary, it's not a time to sit back and relax. Nothing wrong with taking a vacation and relaxing too. But the point is, there's a job to be done. Yes.
The thing is, when they left Mitzrayim, the original goal was that they should go into Eretz Yisrael. And that had a certain permanence to it. Even though it was only this world, there was a certain permanence there to show that it was the home of Klal Yisrael, that it was holy, that was a place where they were going to build the Beis HaMikdash. So shouldn't everything that they did in the desert not represent the fact that this world is temporary, but that temporariness is based on the fact that they were going to go into Eretz Yisrael?
But you could live in a permanent type of structure if you know that this world is temporary. So if you get the lesson that this world is temporary, you can build a nice house for yourself. Because if you understand what this world is all about.
So when they came up from the time, the dog didn't know that they will die one day. By nature.
They didn't know how, they thought they should have gone into Israel right away. They're supposed to go into Israel. But then there was a decree of 40 years, right? After they got a decree, they sin because of the spies. They're going to be in the middle of 38 years in the desert. They know they're going to be in another 38 years. And they know certain amount of people are going to die here, certain amount of people are going to go into Israel.
Yeah, so when you explain the word temple to my mind, that we human beings are going to die one day, and the Neshamah will go to Shemayim, and this will be the permanent. Is this the interpretation?
That's how Ramosha, that's how I understand Ramosha Feinstein is saying that, and therefore. He has to be inspired to make use of his time. Okay. That's what he's saying.
Okay.
Exactly. But recognizing the temporariness of this world. Okay. 120 years is not a long time.
Fine. So that's the concept.
That's what a sukkah represents. So that's what that Mandiyama is saying. That they lived in a hut, a temporary dwelling, and that's what we have to remember that. And if we remember that, then we could do all the 613 mitzvahs with ease. That's why he says, there's a say, the Hinnini Muchan. Many people, before they walk into the sukkah, they say, the Yishpizin. And right after Yishpizin, Hinnini Muchan, I want to fulfill the mitzvah. And Hashem, it should be Chashev, the mitzvah sukkah, as if I filled all the 613 mitzvahs that are connected to it. Tayag mitzvah tuyimba. How, so Ramosha finds, what's the resume of Tayag mitzvah tuyimba? 613 mitzvahs that are connected. So he says, if you have this outlook, regarding life, that to do all 613 mitzvahs is not difficult. If you recognize that this is the purpose for the person, so it's not hard to do the 613 mitzvahs. That's what it means. 613 mitzvahs are easily followed once you do the mitzvah of sukkah. Okay, that's just a little bit. It's hard to me not to say such a pshat from Ramosha, but I found it very interesting because I wanted to share with you. But the idea, what's interesting is that the Mefarshim and Halacha say that when you go into the sukkah, you should remember why you're sitting in a sukkah. The reason, because the Torah itself gave reasons. Because you dwelt in a sukkah during the Midbar. And think, what does that sukkah represent? Does it mean, it means that the perfection, the miracles of the clouds, which seems to be the more of the opinions go with that. And others say because of the actual huts that they lived in the desert. Okay. Now, obviously,
so in the desert, they thought that they are going to permanently live there and not die.
No, so in the desert, once until the sin of the spies, they were on the way to Israel, and they thought they could go to Israel. Right after they sinned with the spies, they knew that they're gonna stay here for 40 years, another 38 years. But when they stayed, it was a very temporary dwelling. Yeah. Like you said, there was manna from heaven, the whole dwelling. You didn't have anything in the bank account. You had it every day. You had a.
You had the money.
There's no. Okay. Now, what's interesting about the chinuch of Ashkenazi ladies, we'll make a bracha.
How is it time bound?
Because it's only this time period of the year, from the 15th day of Tishrei to 7 days, 1 week. It's not
just like the time of day, like you have to say Shema in the first.
So is that sometimes that also means it's like in the midst of tzitzis, by day and not by night. Yeah. So women are exempt from tzitzis because of that. Even though it applies 7 days a week, but if it's only a part of the day, then women are exempt from that. That also makes it time bound.
It's not 24/7.
Right. If it's not 24/7. I mean, they have a specific time, women would be exempt. And therefore, they have to come onto a special limud why women are obligated to make in Kiddush on Shabbos. The mitzvah of Kiddush, ladies are obligated, just like men. And the question is, why? It's a time-bound mitzvah. So we say, because, what we say is that the... It said, "Zachav v'shama b'diba echa nemer." It said, and also, whoever's in the losah says of Shabbos, whoever has to keep the things that we're not allowed to do on Shabbos, are obligated in the obligations of Shabbos. Since ladies are obligated to not to transgress anything on Shabbos, obligated in all the positive commandments of Shabbos.
So David's supposed to make a separate kiddush?
No, she's yotzei with your kiddush. But if, let's say, you're in Israel and she's here, so she has to make kiddush. She must make kiddush. Or she has someone else who makes kiddush for her. Havdalah is a question. What's the question? Havdalah is whether our women are obligated in Havdalah or not. The question is, do we look at Havdalah as part of Shabbos? See, if it's in Shabbos, like Shabbos, it's just like she's obligated to all mitzvahs. She's obligated in Shalosh Shudas too, by the way. You got to tell the lady that's supposed to be Shalosh Shudas, you know. I think they get, you know, they're very diet conscious. But they're obligated in Shalosh Shudas too. But the question is, how do you look at Havdalah? Is Havdalah like Shabbos? Because Havdalah is, you're saying Havdalah, you're recognizing the Shabbos left, and you're talking about it, so therefore, would you say ladies are obligated in Havdalah? Or do you say, no, Havdalah is really something that's after Shabbos? And it's maybe a time-bound mitzvah. So that's the question in Halacha, whether ladies are obligated in Havdalah or not. So that's the question. We say Havdalah, the ladies hear Havdalah from the men. Right? Because they might be obligated in Havdalah. It's possible they're obligated in Havdalah. So they should hear Havdalah. They're supposed to hear Havdalah. Now, the Chinuch writes that the first night of Sukkos, there's a special halacha that every person has to eat a kezayis of bread, at least a kezayis in the sukkah. As you know, let's say it's Chol Hamoed Sukkos, right? If I don't want to have bread, if I don't want to have a real meal, say I want to have fruit, I'm on a real diet. Do I need to go to the sukkah? If I want to have fruit, it's a nice thing, but you don't need to go to the sukkah for fruit. It's not a real meal. But the first night of sukkahs, I have to bring myself into the obligation of the first night of sukkahs. I have to bring my obligation in, of eating in a sukkah. I have to. Well, it's also yontif. I have to eat a kezayis of matzah. Not a matzah, of challah, I have to eat in the sukkah. The first night of sukkah, I have to eat a kezayis in the sukkah. There's a major question in the Rishonim, what about if it's raining the first night of sukkahs? You see, because there's a gzeirah shava, the Gemara learns out of Tesvav, the 15th, it says by Sukkos, it's the 15th of Sukkos, and Pesach is also what? The 15th of Nisan. So there's a gzeirah shava, and just like there's an obligation to have matzah the night of Pesach, an obligation to eat in the sukkah the first night of Sukkos. The question is, how far does that gzeirah shava go? Does that mean even if it's raining, you have to eat in the sukkah on the first night of
Shabbos?
Gzeirah shava means it's a tradition from their rabbis that they got from two psukim with two words.
Is that gzeirah shava from the Gemara?
The Gemara talks about the gzeirah shava, and that's an oral tradition that they got. And there's such a gzeirah shava, there's such a that the pasuk wrote this word here and this word here to teach us something. The same word was written in both places to teach us the obligation that you have to be in the sukkah. You have to eat in the sukkah meal, have some kezayis and olive sides of bread the first night of sukkah.
Women as well?
Women, we said, are exempt from sukkah.
Okay.
Because it's a time-bound mitzvah.
Okay.
If they want to join their husbands, it's nice. It's nice to join their husbands, but they're technically exempt from the sukkah. The question is, what about if a person, let's say, has difficulty eating matzah, right? If he has difficulty, it's hard for him to chew, he's supposed to still eat the matzah, right? Even if it's difficult during the Pesach. So too, the question is, do we say on sukkahs also, you have to go ahead and eat in the sukkah, even if you're in discomfort? That is a question. Because it's a general rule. What's the general rule by sukkahs? General rule is mitzvah put them in a sukkah. If it's raining, right? Rain is coming down. If it'll come in, it'll ruin your soup, right? You have to stay in the sukkah? No. There's a law of mitzvah put them in a sukkah. That's why, that's one of the reasons you're supposed to really sleep in the sukkah. One of the reasons that's given, we don't sleep in the sukkah. Many people don't sleep in the sukkah. Now, if you do, it's beautiful. It's because it's a little cold. It's very cold at night. In certain areas where people live, it's very cold. And therefore, you're in pain. And there's a halacha that you have to, the way you act in the sukkah, the way you act during the year, where you have during your house. It says, Keshu ki ain't to duro. You live the way you dwell in the sukkah, the way you live. during the year you don't live in discomfort. You wouldn't be so cold. That's why maybe some people put steams in their sukkah, maybe heaters in their sukkah. But that's why one of the reasons why people don't sleep in the sukkah in certain climates. The question is, and if it's raining during the rest of the year, if it's raining during Chol HaMoed, you would not have to eat in the sukkah if it's raining. But the question is the first night of Sukkot. The first night, and outside of Israel, the second night as well, is a major discussion in the Rishonim. Do we say that the only exemption, if you're in pain, you're in discomfort, is only the rest of Sukkot? But the first night of Sukkot, you must eat in the Sukkot, even if it's raining, even if you're in discomfort. Or do we say no? The first night of Sukkot is just like the rest of Sukkot. If you're in discomfort, you don't have to. So that's a major machlokas in the Rishonim. Based on that machlokas, so what do we do? A lot of what we do is the first night of Sukkot, we try to wait to see that hopefully the rain is going to stop. If we see that the rain, it's not stopping, and so then we'll go ahead and we'll go to the Sukkah, we'll make Kiddush in the Sukkah, we'll have a kazayas of challah in the Sukkah, and then we'll finish the meal in the house, right? That's what we will do. But if you see that it cleared up after you finish in the house, then you would go back to the Sukkah. Because maybe you did not fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkah that way. Because when you're in the Sukkah and it's raining and you ate your gazayas, are you filling the mitzvah of Sukkah? Well, you're not. Is there a mitzvah of Sukkah? No mitzvah of Sukkah. If it's raining the first night of Sukkahs. So that's the question in the Rishonah. Do you make a bracha leishiv basukkah if it's raining the first night of Sukkah? If it's Chol HaMoed Sukkahs and you're in the Sukkah, if it's raining, you don't be there. You won't make a bracha leishiv basukkah. Since there's a suffix, it's a question whether there's a mitzvah to be in the sukkah the first night of Sukkot or not, if it's raining. So we don't make a bracha. When you have a suffix in making a bracha, we don't make a bracha. So we don't make a bracha. That's the Mishavur's opinion.
Can you go in as many times as you want and say the bracha as many times? Could you go in 10 times a day and say the bracha every time?
As long as you have to do something in the sukkah that would require you to make the bracha. Generally, you can also having some sort of a meal or something. Also, if you didn't really make any real interruption from the first time you went in the sukkah, then the first bracha would carry you to the second time if you didn't really make an interruption. You went in the sukkah and then you went out of the sukkah, right?
Yeah. So, but the minimum you went, is you have to say it once on the first night of sukkah.
You don't have to, you might not say the leishiv basukkah. You might not say the leishiv basukkah the first night of sukkah if it's raining.
You have to say it at least once.
It depends.
The whole time.
Say again.
It's deoraita.
Again, very good. It's deoraita. It's a mitzvah min haTorah to be in the sukkah the first night. But the question is that if everything, the weather's beautiful, 75 degrees outside, or whatever it is, or it's not raining, you have an obligation min haTorah to eat in the sukkah the first night of sukkah. That is no question. Everyone agrees the first night of Sukkot, the weather permitting, you have an obligation to be in the Sukkot. Now, everyone agrees if it's Chol HaMoed Sukkot, intermediate days of Sukkot, and it's raining outside, and it's coming down, and it would ruin your soup, everyone agrees there's no mitzvah to be in the Sukkot. There's no obligation then. If it's intermediate days, Chol HaMoed Sukkot, right? If it's Chol HaMoed, then it's raining. Is that correct?
Yeah.
The question is, the first night of Sukkot, it's raining. Do you have an obligation to be in that sukkah when it's raining?
Yes.
That's a question. That's a question.
What is rule Shiva Kabin? So at least the first night, you have to
be the first night. But the reason, obligation for the first, but it says 7 days, but yet we, but there's another halacha that says if you mitzayer, to sit well in the sukkah with an halacha. If you're in discomfort, mitzdayer, you're potter from the sukkah. If you're in pain, that's another halacha. It's a 7-day stay in the sukkah, and also it says what? But you have to live in the sukkah the way you live in the house. Do you have rain coming down through your house? Will you live in your house that way? You step out of your house, and rain's coming into your food. So
not a contradiction,
but so it's a clarification of the application of when does the mitzvah of sukkah apply. Mr. Sukkah applies.
But it's any good.
Say that again?
It's any good. It's opposite.
Or it explains when does this law apply. God says I tell you an obligation Say on the sukkah, right?
Let's go. First night of sukkah is rain. You said, Basukot is which you wrap your meal. You cannot sit the whole night, but for a mosi you are obligated. No matter what.
But I want to say it's not because of
the don't be so formal.
It's not because of the pasuk of Basukot Teishu Shivas Yomim. That's not what's obligating you the first night. There's a new thing that's obligating the first night. Because of your pasuk of Basukot Teishu Shivas Yomim, you should have to sit in the sukkah all 7 days if it's raining.
Okay, what is the obligation for the first night?
There's a special pasuk that says we have a special limud called the Gezeirah Shavah that compares it to Pesach.
Okay,
that just like Pesach, you have an obligation to eat matzah, there's a chil, there's an obligation to sit in the sukkah, there's an obligation to be in the sukkah on the 15th.
Okay, so
that's an obligation.
All right,
It has a din minatorah.
Okay.
It's one of the ways that the Torah is darshan.
Okay.
It's considered daraita.
Okay.
Now that we have an obligation, now there's an obligation to be in the sukkah, right?
Right.
Now the question is, there's another halacha by sukkah that says, in general, if you're in pain, if you're a mitzta'er, you are exempt from the sukkah.
Is that daraita?
That's a daraita too.
That's daraita. So that's what I say. You have any good?
Very good.
What's the source of that, of being kutter if it's raining?
That's the source. It says peishu kein tadur. You have to live in the sukkah the way you live during the year.
Okay.
And during the year, if you're in discomfort, you would not.
It's a pasuk.
It's a drash from a pasuk. Yes.
Also from then, what is the pasuk?
Shivas, it says peishu, but sukkah is peishu shivas yomim.
So,
and you have to live in the
school.
But they learn that it says peishu. They learn that it has. You have to dwell kein to the way you live.
Let's say from Peshvah.
So now the question is, the first night of Sukkot, do we say that the exemption of someone who is mitzta'er from a pasuk, even though I told you there's an obligation to be in the Sukkot, when you're mitzta'er, so maybe, let me ask you a different question. If it's Chol HaMoed Sukkot, right? I told you, Chol HaMoed Sukkot, you're not obligated to have, if you want to have fruit, you can have fruit outside the sukkah, right? But if you want to wash, if you want to have bread, where do you have to have bread on Chol HaMoed Sukkot? You must have it in the sukkah, right? Correct?
At least a kazayim. You get less than a kazayim.
I'm saying, Chol HaMoed Sukkot. Talk about Chol HaMoed. Chol HaMoed, you don't have an obligation that you have to bring yourself to eat in a sukkah on Chol HaMoed, unless you decide to what? That you want to have bread. But if you decide not to have bread,
you don't have to go.
But the first night of sukkahs, you must have bread. And you must have bread. Now the question is, if you're going to be in pain, I told you.
We went for dress all over the place five times. So what is that? The Pesach Halacha.
Very good. The Pesach Halacha is, there's two opinions. There's different opinions in the Rishonim. It's not clear. Meaning there's two opinions whether you say.
What would you do?
So what we do is we say like this. I would say you go to the sukkah because maybe there is an obligation. Maybe you have an obligation, even if it's raining, to be in the sukkah during the first night. But I will not make the bracha leishev basukkah. Don't make the bracha leishev basukkah.
Because you're not dwelling.
Because some say I don't have to. I might not be obligated. Right? When it comes to a bracha, the bracha does not prevent me from filling the mitzvah. You understand? If I don't make a bracha on the mitzvah of sukkah, when it's raining. Very good. When it's raining, I go into a sukkah and I'm eating the first night of sukkahs. It's raining. I don't make a bracha. Can I fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah without making a bracha on the sukkah? Or I have to, in order for me to fill the mitzvah of sukkah, I have to make a blessing. You don't have to make a blessing to fill the mitzvah. If a guy puts on tefillin and he doesn't make a blessing on the tefillin, did you fill the mitzvah of tefillin?
Any
mitzvah. You took a lulav of an esrei, you didn't make a blessing. Did you fill the mitzvah of a lulav of an esrei? Yes.
So, what if you're, let's say that this is ridiculous, but let's say that you were with a bunch of people, you know, drinking four cups of wine, just happened to be doing this, and you know, eating some crackers, and it happened to be on the 15th of Nisan.
Okay, very, very good.
You had no kavanah to be doing Pesach.
Very good, very good. So, general rule is, we say, you know, that you're getting to the question of mitzvah srichas kavanah, that we, you know, a mitzvah that's a biblical mitzvah, you really need to have kavanah, have a mind to fulfill the mitzvah.
Maybe you just say that before the sukkah, like, I am about to fulfill the mitzvah of...
So you have a mind. You have
not saying God's
name. You have a mind. If there's a mitzvah of sukkah, I want to be to the mitzvah of sukkah now. If there's a mitzvah. But I don't make the bracha leisha basukkah. So I'll sit in the sukkah. So what do we do? So what we do is, we usually wait a little bit. We wait to see if the rain's going to stop. If it doesn't stop, we go into the sukkah, we make kiddush. We don't make a leisha basukkah. And then we go and we finish the meal in the house, right?
Kiddush and motzi.
Make kiddush, and we'll make hamotzi. We'll have the kezayis in the sukkah, and then we'll go to the house. The second night of sukkos, we're a little bit more lenient outside the land of Israel, and we will say you could even start the meal. It's best to wait a little bit to see if it's going to stop. But if you don't see it's going to stop, you could even start in the house. Start, make kiddush in the house. And then go back to the sukkah and finish the meal and have a kezayis in the sukkah. Or even if it doesn't stop raining, you go back, you go down to the sukkah the second night as well. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. Now,
to finish the meal.
To finish the meal, correct. To have a kezayis, to eat a kezayis.
Even though it's raining.
Even though it's raining.
Just a bench in the sukkah.
So that's a good question. Because the kids don't
understand. So the tzaddik, we forgot about it.
Because there's the opinion, there's some opinions that say that the first night of sukkah is unique, that there might be a special obligation to be in the sukkah, even if there's tzar. So therefore, we take that into, and therefore we'll go into the sukkah. Correct. However, Mr. Young Rice, if you go back home, then you see after you finish and you ate in the sukkah when it was really raining, and you happen to be a person who stays up late at night, you're learning most probably or whatever, and then it's cleared up. The first night, you should go back to the sukkah.
Say the bracha.
And make the bracha leishiv basukkah. And eat a kezayis. Start again. See, which would be interesting, because general rule is, let's say if you go to a sukkah during Chol HaMoed, and it starts to rain, and you're middle of the meal, and you go home, even if it stops raining, we don't have to stop, go back down again. Because once you, because it's considered a tirchah, an extra difficulty for you, and once you already... You started the meal here, and you went home, and you already started eating back in the house. You don't have to go back down again. But the first night is unique. So we go ahead to...
Two times a week. Let's say you finished the meal, it was raining for 1. Then you sleep, you got there at 3 o'clock.
If you're up at 3 night. O'clock, it's... It's still considered the first night.
Until
Amura Shacha.
Really?
Until Amura Shacha, it should be considered the...
But
there's a whole discussion. Do you compare it to the night of Pesach? So it's a whole discussion. But yes, let's say tentatively you could say yes. You have it till the whole morning. Till
so
Amunah Shach. You can make a leish sukkah at 4 o'clock in the morning. If it's not the first light did not go up in the east, it's not Amunah Shach yet. Make a leish sukkah.
So is this based on the fact that the importance of eating the sukkah the first night is so great that it's still the drush of Messiah Haga part of the sukkah?
Yes, it might be because it's possible that there's no, the application of Messiah doesn't apply the first night. And if you say you do apply mitzvah the first night, that mitzvah is putter from sukkah the first night, so you really were putter when you ate in the sukkah. So you really didn't eat in the sukkah yet. If it's cleared up, you should go back down.
Sort of hedging your bets.
So, meaning what?
Like, so either you're being safe about it. Like, if you're putter, then you didn't say God's name in vain. But if you're Hayav, then you did what you're supposed to do.
Exactly. Very well said.
And you also have the chance to, if it clears up, to do it again.
To do it according to all, right. Exactly. You said it very well. Hedging your bets. Make sure, because we want to make sure we're doing the mitzvah. And sometimes, you know, there's different opinions exactly, do you have the obligation or not at this point? So that's the background. So if it happens, and also, you know, it's been a very rainy time. Some people might have missed Kiddush Levana this month because they're quite rainy and cloudy. And Yom Tov is coming out very early, like we said. A month from now, Yom Tov is coming, so this might be applicable, and I thought it would be important to discuss.
What about Malacha? So, is it the first 2 days?
Right, so Malacha, in the land of Israel, is just the first day, and outside of Israel, it's the first 2 days. So.
What about the last day?
The last day is also, the last day will be the eighth day, took of the Shmini Atzeres, which in the land of Israel is 1 day, Shmini Atzeres, and here we have it 2 days. We call it Shmini Atzeres, we call it the eighth day, and then we call it the ninth day, we call it Simchas Torah, which is also part of Shmini Atzeres.
So there's 4 days you don't do Malacha.
Correct. And this year it's 4 days, and this year we're running into Shabbos twice. We're going to be running into Shabbos. So that's going to be Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, and it's going to be Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. Right? That's how it comes out.
Yeah.
That's how it's
6 days.
And that's how it just, you know, that's how Rosh Hashanah.
The way
Rosh Hashanah comes.
There'll be 3 straight days of no Malacha.
Correct.
Yes.
So, like, how do you have enough food for 3 days of that?
So that, like Avram said, you make a there's a special thing you could cook.
Oh,
on Erev Shabbos, on Friday, you could cook on Friday for Shabbos. You have even though generally on Yom Tov we cook just for that day, we don't cook for 1 day of Yom Tov for the next day of Yom Tov, but this is special, if you make a special Erev Tavshilin on Wednesday afternoon, before the Yom Tov, you make an Erev Tavshilin.
What's that Erev Tavshilin?
It's, you take, let's say, a piece of fish, and some bread or matzah, and you make a special blessing that you're starting to prepare now for Shabbos. So if you start to prepare for Shabbos now, before the holiday, so then you can continue preparing for Shabbos even on the holiday itself. You can prepare on Friday. On Friday, you can prepare for Shabbos.
What if it's Shabbos and then the first 2 days of Sukkot? So like.
Sorry,
what if Sukkot is on Sunday and Monday?
I'm with Pesach.
Yes.
The Erev Pesach is Shabbos.
But then, so like,
how Friday.
You
cook on
Friday. Because like,
it's the whole thing. Shabbos.
Right.
Like, it's Shabbos, and then the next day is the first day of Sukkot. So like, how could you have something lit that you could then use the fire to cook?
So if you leave, let's say, very good.
Like a yard site.
Right, let's say you had a blech on Shabbos, right?
Mm-hmm.
You cover, then after Shabbos, you remove the blech, and you still have that fire on. Right?
So you should keep a fire going.
Right, you'll have a fire going on Shabbos. You put the fire on before Shabbos. Let's see, you had it covered for Shabbos. And then you, let's say on Yom Tov, right, like you said, like a Yahrzeit candle is also a good idea.
Yeah.
As long as there's an existing light, you can light from an existing light. But the key is preparation. If you prepare in advance enough, you will be able to do it right. The problem with the people wait to the last minute, then it's overwhelming to prepare properly and have to put everything into place.
Mm-hmm.
But the proper preparation, everything will be able to be worked out.
A Chabad rabbi in Miami told me a story to go along with what you've been teaching, that he was actually a hurricane there the first day of Sukkah. But he was determined to say Kiddush in the Sukkah. So he went out, the wind was blowing the roof of the Sukkah off, and the rain was pouring down. He went out there, he had his cup of wine real quick, and said, Kiddush, and then he ran back in the house.
The only thing I will say to that, if it was dangerous, then I would not allow that. I mean, I'm just going on record, I want to be clear.
Okay.
Even if we say that it's raining, you know, to fulfill that opinion, I hope that situation wasn't dangerous. Hurricanes. But if it's dangerous, then we would not allow to be go to the sukkah. You know, there's a famous story coming to Yom Kippur. You know, in Europe, Chaim Briska was known to be. The machmir, I often say that. That briska is, if you know, a briska means it came from, not lipton brisk, iced tea. It came from a town in Europe called Brisk. And then in Lithuania. And one of their great rabbis was Rav Chaim from Brisk, whose father was the Beis Halevi, and Chaim Soloveitchik. And that's where Rabbi Soloveitchik from Yeshiva University is from that family. And they're known to be very stringent. They're known to be concerned for all the different opinions. Like you spoke about hedging your bets.
Yeah.
So they like to hedge their bets to make sure that everything they do is no question. They fulfill as many opinions as possible. And they asked, I presume you would find matzah on Pesach, you know, to make sure that a brisk matzah is made in such a way that they might tell you it's really burnt pretty good to make sure there's no question of hummus. Right? That's what I would presume. But the question was, in Europe, when it was a question by Yom Kippur, it seemed that Rav Chaim Ibriska was very lenient on telling people who were, there were issues of diseases and malaria and all different issues, and that he would be very lenient of telling people to eat on Yom Kippur. So they said to him, Rabbi Chaim, I don't understand. You're such a machmir, you're always so stringent. And what's going on over here? It's Yom Kippur and you're being so... He says, I'm being machmir in pikuach, in the sakana sefosh, in pikuach nefesh. I'm being stringent on watching yourself. On the mitzvah for a person to watch himself and to protect himself, that he shouldn't be in danger. The Torah says... It's a special thing. The Torah says you have to live by the Torah, not to die by the Torah. There's only a few we welcome everyone. There's only a few exceptions to the rule.
Not like Islam, huh?
Not like Islam. Alhamdulillah, Erev Avdolot.
Now they tell you, Bebachata Bachayim, right?
So
if your mayor Kumber says, okay, let them do it.
So
the Americans die.
So, but the Torah said, "V'chai b'hem." The Torah said, "You should live by the Torah, not to die by the Torah." So, therefore, it was a question of sakana. And I was with somebody this past Sunday, young man. He had a heart attack, whatever. And he started telling me about Yom Kippur and all that. I said, "Listen, you do whatever your doctor says. Don't play around." You know what I'm saying? You can't play around. Because that's what the Torah says you're supposed to do. Torah says if it's dangerous, you can't even eat
treif.
That's right, if necessary. Unless if you don't have to eat treif, you can eat something that's kosher, eat something kosher.
What if a pregnant woman is really craving treif?
So that's, you have to know if it's real, it's not, you know, halacha discussions about it, but if it's a real danger, and I'm saying a lot of them, if it's a danger and if it's,
yeah.
Even whisper in her ear that, you know, it's Yom Kippur, maybe she'll come back to her senses. You know, you have to look, research this. It's discussed in halacha. It's a real issue.
I have a question.
Yes.
Let's say that you have to eat treif for some reason. Should you say a problem?
Oh, that's a very good question. So that's
like
that's
existential question.
That's discussed in halacha. You'll see, some say you don't. Many say, I think there is a difference if a person is doing it b'mezid, intentionally eating not kosher. A guy's intentionally eating not kosher. Then I think many say you should not make a bracha. If a guy's intentionally, I should make a bracha, baruch atah Hashem, when intentionally I know I'm not supposed to be eating it.
Mm-hmm.
But if let's say I have to eat it, let's say pikuach nefashos, I have to eat it, so then I think there's a lot of room to say, yes, you should make a bracha. Whatever it might be, because I needed to eat it. It's not that I'm doing something right. I need to eat it. To me, that's kosher. So if you make shakol niyavivar, whatever the food is, if it's bread, you make a motzi. If it's bread, that would, let's say, issues of mice, whatever things, the challah, whatever it might be, you make a bracha. That's what. But to really, that's off the cuff. But to get a real clear answer, it's a discuss in Shulchan Aruch. It's mishabura. It gives a taz on it. The Taz discusses this case. I once discussed this. So I gave class on the 7th. I gave an NYU assure on the 7th parak of Bracha, Shlosh Shachlo. And over there, there's a Tosfos that gets into each person ate Tevel.
What's that?
Tevel is food that you didn't take off certain types. And also Tosfos discusses And over there, on that, based on that Tosfos, there's a lot of discussion about food that was forbidden. Would you make a bracha? And would you make a bracha Rishona? Would you make a bracha Achrona? Would you say bracha Samaz? I said, it's a very good question. But we just have to look at to see it inside exactly the clear answer. But that's now I thought tonight we were getting some chatzchila, but we're just preparing ourselves tonight. I think we're going to have a part two. I think next week we're going to try to get to the minchas chinuch on this mitzvah because this was getting ready. This is the preparation. We spoke at a lot of halach, more the halachic aspect, and you'll see the minchas chinuch has a very interesting question, interesting insight into the mitzvah of sukkah. And Mr. Shem, next week we'll try to delve into it. Same time, same station. 9 o'clock next week. If you want to bring friends, we don't discriminate. We appreciate the more people, the better.
Bring questions too.
We appreciate all the questions tonight. All right, most things are answered, I hope. Okay, very good. And also, the art scroll, in the back of the art scroll, you'll see in the art scroll Malzah, he'll discuss some of the issues that we discussed tonight, if it's raining, what to do. Now that after you had the discussion tonight, maybe you'll take a look in the art scroll in the back, you'll appreciate some of the discussion over there. Okay. No, the art scroll on the Sukkot Malzah.